This podcast replay is brought to you by Choice Mortgage Bank. Fixed mortgage rates under 3.5%. Military veterans, zero down, 100% financing. Call the owner's cell phone right now. Michael Codsey, 561-441-2730. That's 561-441-2730.
So we'll talk to my man Gary Washburn from the Boston Globe. You can follow him on Twitter at G Washburn Globe. He covers the NBA. He covers the Celtics. He does an awesome job. And Gary's always been kind enough over the years to join us here on the program. Gary, good afternoon, my friend. How are you doing?
Hey, big guy, how's it going?
I am loving life, man. Cannot complain. Hell, Gary, we got one of the surprises in the NBA. You've got to be just as surprised as we are when you see the Heat at 15-5 and the way they've played this year.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to be negative, but I think about time. You know, the Heat have been waiting for a few years to build a team like this and to really have a lot of their, not only the superstars like the Butlers, but the complimentary guys come together, and they, you know, I mean, who would have thought like a Kendrick Nunn and Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero would be the guys to step up without, like, let's say, Deion Waiters and James Johnson. So I think it's a pleasant surprise, and I think it's made the Eastern Conference more interesting that the Heat are a factor now. And I think that win last night at Toronto was probably one of the biggest wins since the breakup of the Big Three. You know, I think that just says a lot about where the Heat are to win at Toronto. That's one of the tougher places to play in the league.
Yeah, no, and listen, man, they've beaten Milwaukee. They've beaten Toronto at home, and, you know, the Celtics are another undefeated team right now. The top five teams in the conference are 43-2 at home, and those two losses are both to Miami. So tonight, Miami's trying to do it again and give one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference a home loss. So how good are these Celtics right now? Because obviously they're pretty damn good at home.
Yeah, they haven't had a lot of home games. They played mostly on the road. They were able to beat Toronto and Milwaukee at home. They're a solid club right now. They're not playing their best basketball. Gordon Hayward's been out for the last few weeks with a hand injury. Marcus Smart will not play tonight because he's sick and he's got an abdomen injury. They're a little bit shorthanded. But I think, like the Heat, they've been one of the pleasant surprises in the Eastern Conference. They've been able to play well in the role. They've been able to kind of be more harmonious. Last year was a chaotic year in Boston for the Celtics, and they kind of put that behind them and moved forward. So it should be a very competitive game. Who knows what the Heat has in terms of energy after an overtime game. Toronto-Boston is a tough back-to-back. The Celtics have been off since Sunday afternoon, so we'll see which team has the most energy. But I think the Heat will come and play a good game.
Yeah, I believe that too. I think, Gary, they will come and play one hell of a game there with the Celtics. But when you look at the team now, and I got to tell you something, Gary, and it's not because I'm some genius or anything, but I think a lot of us that follow the game, when we saw Kyrie go out and we looked at Kemba come in, I thought it was the perfect fit. I thought it was a genius move by Danny Ainge, and it's really translated on the court, right? That is the leader that this team needed, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think they needed more of a stabilizing force. And Kyrie had never been a leader before in any of his teams. I mean, you know, he's a young guy that's still trying to figure it out. And I just think it was kind of a bad combination last year to kind of throw him into that role. And he asked for it, so it was his fault to be the leader of a team that was seeking a championship. And he was going through his own emotional issues, his own personal issues, and it reflected that on the team and kind of left a really bad stench on the team. Just his personality affected the team greatly. And I just think now bringing a guy like Kemba Walker, he's mellow, he's a chill guy. He doesn't get too excited, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low. And I think he's absolutely thrilled to go that he has a chance to win every night. I mean, I think that, you know, I think what we take for granted is everybody has a chance to win. We look at all the league superstars, and we want to all win championships. But there are, quite honestly, a lot of players around the league that don't get to win. They're playing bad organizations, bad teams, that never get to a playoff series or never win a playoff series. And Kemba's never won a playoff series in his career. So the fact that he's on a team that has a chance to win most nights, you know, they're not going to win every night, obviously, but they have a chance to compete every night. He's thrilled. So I think that harmony has spread into the locker room, and they are a much happier bunch.
It looks also like you've got – it looks like the roles are a little bit more defined now. It's almost like the point where you almost had too much talent last year. Is that the deal?
Yeah, too much talent, too many guys with personal agendas. Free agency was coming up for a couple of guys. A couple of guys were looking at their rookie contract extensions. Other guys had done well in the playoff run before. They went, you know, to Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and they were – a win away from the NBA Finals, and there's guys who have contributed to that team that said, listen, they want more of a role, and then you bring back Kyrie and Gordon Hayward and thrust them into the offense, and it just, the chemistry never worked. And unfortunately for the Celtics, they tried, they had all the talent, they were probably the most talented team in the NBA last year besides the Warriors, and they just botched it. And I just think everybody around the organization knows that, that last year was a wasted year, and they tried to make up for that and move forward.
Well, what did Brad Stevens said he learned from this? Because as a young coach, that was a first experience for him on having to deal with so many egos, so many agendas.
I think for him, his biggest faux pas of that whole thing was he lets. And, you know, I think we all would do that in many cases. He walks into a locker room, and these guys are grown men. You know, they're making money. They got families. They have their own lives. They're grown. You know, these are not college kids, although they're college age, a lot of them. But they're not college kids. They're grown men. And he let the players over his years police themselves. He did not get involved in locker room issues. He did not put his hands on certain things. And I think last year, he did that and it burned him. And there was all these issues going on in the locker room that either he didn't know about or he ignored because he said, hey, they'll handle it. I got veterans in there that will police the locker room, and they couldn't police it. And by the time he learned and got all the information about it, it was too late. And it was too far gone. And I think now he probably has more of a hand in locker room issues, how these guys get along, some of the young guys compared with some of the veteran guys, because it was just such an interesting mix. You know, Al Horford was a 32-year-old veteran who led by example, didn't really say much. Marcus Morris, a guy who wore his emotions on his sleeve. Terry Rozier, a guy who wanted to start, and now he obviously is in Charlotte. There's a lot of guys and a lot of agendas, and it's not that they hated each other, they just didn't. They weren't that close. And I think Steven has learned, hey, I got to put my hands on this a little bit more in terms of locker room chemistry than I did before.
He looks like a great communicator. He looks like a cerebral guy. How is he as a disciplinarian? Because I don't see him as that disciplinarian guy. I kind of see him as the guy that gets to you with logic. So you tell me, because you're around him.
Yeah, I mean, he will never air out his players to the media. I think the players respect that. He'll just bench you. He'll just not play you. He'll just, you know, play a different guy. And you just know that it's something you're doing. And I'm sure he'll bring you in his office and he'll explain it. They'll pull you aside and he'll give you all the consultation that you need. But I also think that's his way of letting you know, hey, you're not getting the job done. And I'm not going to embarrass you. I'm not going to air you out. I'm not going to say anything to the media. But, you know, the other night he pulled center Daniel Tice, played 7 minutes, he's a starting center. He played 7 minutes the other night at Brooklyn because he didn't like the way he played. And so that was the message. Hey, man, you not get it done? Sit right next to me here on the bench. And that's his communication. And I think that he does a lot more in private. And unlike some coaches who air out their players in the media or who do that, it's not my fault, it's the player's fault. Stephen takes responsibility for putting his players in positions to succeed. And if you're not succeeding, you'll put another player in that position to succeed.
Gary Washburn joining us here from the Boston Globe, NBA writer, covers also the Celtics. Follow him on Twitter at @GWashburnGlobe. Gary, how deep do they go? Because it looks like he still goes pretty deep into that bench.
Yeah, I mean, they incorporated two rookies this year into the rotation, Grant Williams and Carson Edwards. Brad Wanamaker has played well as a backup point guard, so he can go deep. I mean, the center position has been fluid. I mean, you got Tyus Ennis Cantor, Robert Williams. You just got a rotating kind of merry-go-round of center. So they play a lot of different guys. And then you got the mainstays, Kimba, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. And it was Marcus Smart, but he's out tonight against the Heat. So, you know, he'll mix and match. You know, he'll play whatever lineup he feels like is best. If it's super small, super big, medium, whatever lineup he feels like is going to succeed, he'll do that. They're going to have a tough time. They're going to have to figure out who's going to defend Jimmy Butler. They're a team that gives up a lot of threes. Miami likes to shoot the three.
Ooh, that's not good. That's not a good combination tonight, man. Yeah.
Yeah, the Robinsons and the Heroes like to shoot that three ball, so they're going to have to figure out a way to play better defense on that three-point shot. Or I don't say it could get ugly, but Miami could definitely walk away with another win.
Wow. You made me feel good. I like it, Gary. Yeah. All right, Gary, let me ask you. I would imagine that when you start hearing the stories that are already coming out of Brooklyn with Kyrie and how awkward he is and the lack of communication and those kind of things and his moodiness and all of that, how much of that caught you by surprise when he was there with the Celtics? How much of that got out to you guys, his quirkiness?
I think there's always been a reputation. He's always had a reputation of being a guy with different personalities depending on the day, the time, the circumstance, the situation. And the question was, when he came to Boston, could he handle the leadership of a team to be the face of the franchise, which is what he wanted? And it ended up that he couldn't handle it. And I think in Brooklyn, they're going to have to deal with it. They're committed to 4 years of him, so they're going to have to deal with it. So they're going to make all the, you know, the whole thing is easy as possible for him. They're going to defend him. They're going to have his back. They're not going to say nothing's going to get out in terms of the Brooklyn side, the Nets side, because they're committed. They signed him to a max contract or a 4-year deal, and Kevin Durant's coming back next year, and so they're going to just kind of get through this year to see how he handles it and where they go, and then, you know, hope, cross their fingers that next year when Durant back, then they become a championship contender. But I think everybody knew, one, Kyrie's not a guy who's going to play in a whole lot of, you know, 82 games. He's not a guy who's going to play every game. He's going to sit out with some injuries. That's already happened. And is he going to have his certain personality quirks? Yes. Is his talent good enough to deal with that and overcome that? In some situations, yes, it is. So I think the Nets are hoping this is the case, that he plays so well and he does so many good things on the court, you kind of ignore some of the things off the court.
It's one of those things that I always had that discussion with people, that I never considered him a superstar because I don't think that he has the leadership qualities that you need from a superstar. All-star, no doubt in my mind, with that handle and the shooting and all of that. But to me, that was the one thing that team needed. That team needed, and you know what? Kemba's not a superstar, but he's a super leader. He's just one of those guys that knows how to bring people together. And hell, that Hornet Hornets franchise, the little they accomplish, it's because of that guy. That guy was the heart and soul of that. And that's the thing about Kyrie. I wonder if he ever feels that need to, I don't know how to phrase it, but it's have that passion that you've got to have to lead. You know what I'm saying? To care that much. That's just not him. It's not his DNA.
No, I think he would like to be considered a leader, but I think emotionally he's not steady enough. I was not going to say stable, but steady enough to be the voice of reason, to say, hey, guys, we lost four in a row. Let's chill. Let's go bowling. Or let's not panic here. Let's do something team-wise. Let's get it together. You know, let's not panic. I've been through these things before. That's what leaders do. And I don't know if he was capable of that last year. And that's a good question. I mean, is he matured over a year? Is he happy that he's home and near his New Jersey home? We don't know. We don't know. I think the biggest issue with Kyrie Irving is I don't think anyone knows, and maybe he doesn't either, what makes him truly happy. You know, he said, I wasn't happy in Cleveland. When we won the title, I wasn't. You know, I was like, this is great, but let's move on. Like, that's what he said. So he wasn't happy being a champion. Was he happy being a gold medalist? No. I covered him in that Rio Games. He was miserable most of the time in the Olympics. So what makes him happy? And I think that's what the thing is. He's been trying to find his happiness, and you can't have a leader who's trying to find out who he is and what makes him happy. That's not
going to
work.
Wow. Man, if he gets married between him and his wife, wow, that's going to be a, whoa, that's a lot, man, because you got to try to make your wife happy all the time. And now Kyrie's, no, you got to make me happy. Wow, that's going to be one hell of a race when he's married. All right, as I digress here, Gary, who's the guy that we all know Kemba's kind of the leader of that team, but I would imagine one of the other young guys has to kind of take that step forward. Has that happened, and who's that guy?
Both Brown and Jason Tatum have taken steps forward. Brown's been more steady and consistent. Tatum can be the guy who can drop 30 on you. They make being kind of the sports center highlight play. So both those guys are taking an expected step forward. It was Gordon Hayward who was playing very well before his injury. Obviously, he's out tonight and for the next probably couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But those two guys, Tatum and Brown, have been pleasant surprises in terms of their ability to take a step forward with Kyrie gone and take more of a responsibility and leadership role with the team. That's what they needed.
Oh, that's the one thing that I was always wondering, because they obviously you always need somebody to kind of take that leadership, and outside of Kemba, you would like it to be somebody from within that locker room that's been there for a while. Gary, what's the prediction? What happens tonight? You got the Heat? You got the Celtics? Who wins?
You know, Big Lie, I've not watched enough of the Heat to really. I just have not caught a lot of their games on the league pass. They haven't had a lot. They've been kind of overshadowed on the national television situation, too. I haven't seen a lot of Heat. I think it's a close game. Just because the Celtics are at home and they've got some 3 days off, I think they pull it out. It's going to be a very good game. And I think that it's good to see Spo have a really good competitive team. He's a great coach. And I think he's, you know, some of his guys have kind of betrayed him over the last couple of years with not being in shape or not being ready or whatever, the Deion Waiter situation. But it's good to see Spo have a real good team to work with where they can maybe make a long playoff run.
Gary, as always, you're a stud, my brother. Thank you for taking some time and dropping the knowledge. Follow him on Twitter at G Washburn Globe and catch his exceptional work there at the Boston Globe as he covers the NBA and the Celtics. Gary, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
You got it, baby. There you go. Gary Washburn. Good stuff there from the Boston Globe, as always. Appreciate that. That one soundbite where he talked about the Heat shooting, you hadn't seen that a lot, but talking about, and he's right about it, that the Heat do love, they're one of the top 3-point shooting teams. And if the Celtics are going to suck that much at defending the three, that is a nice combination for Miami going into this game. And Brandon was right that sent in that that text on the YouTube chat board. Goran Dragic, strain right groin. I see it there where Eric Spoelstra said he is out for tonight, unfortunately. So there will be no miracle cure.
Groin injury?
Yes.
2 weeks, 3 minimum?
Well, it depends. Depends on how bad it is, you know. He's already missed a couple of days. Maybe he's getting closer. You never know.
That's one of those ones.
You can't
you
rush
just,
it.
You just, you, yeah. Until it's well,
yeah.
You start messing with it. If you're 80% up, guess what happened?
Yeah. No, you're right. Can't argue with that. Let's see. What do we got here?
Should be a long night for the Celts, man.
Yeah.
If they can't defend the three, Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Show up, kid. Please keep Dion where he is.
Yes, definitely.